Welcome to the MedTech Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent in regulatory affairs, quality, clinical, engineering, R&D, and other areas for medical device, digital health, diagnostics, and other organizations across the U.S. life sciences sector. Here's your host, Mitch Robbins.
All right, welcome back to another episode here on the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. I am your host, Mitch Robbins, the founder and managing director here at the Anthony Michael Group, building high-performing teams and careers across MedTech. Today, I'm joined by Mr. Garth Conrad. Garth is the Vice President of Quality for Flex Health Solutions. He comes to the show today with almost 25 years of industry experience across MedTech. He's worked for a variety of the large strategics, name brands that you know, Medtronic. He's worked for J&J. He's worked for BD. He has his Bachelor's of Science in Materials Engineering, his MBA, and he is a certified Lean Six Sigma Black Belt holder. Now, Flex Health Solutions is a division of Flex, which is a $30 billion organization with about 170,000 employees worldwide. If you're not familiar with the organization, it's really a global supply chain and manufacturing solutions provider. Garth is the VP of quality over health solutions specifically. Without further ado, man, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today, Mitch?
I'm great. You know, we've got a lot of mutual friends and colleagues in the industry, which is how we ended up being able to talk. And I'm grateful that you're going to be here today, sharing your story for our listening audience. And so, like so many of these shows, I like to be able to understand where you came from so that we know how you get to where you are today. And I think to do that best, we got to go way back in time and talk about where'd you grow up? What was home life like?
Sure. So I grew up in New Hampshire, is where I was born and raised. New England from the heart. And, I still follow all the teams and everything from being up there. But since then, I've moved across the country to a lot of various places. My family is spread across the U.S., so I have people that are still in New England. I've got people that are down in the Virginia area, some in Florida, some in Connecticut. So really, having moved around quite a bit, I've got family spread out across the U.S.
That's awesome. And so what about your primary family? Were you one of siblings or were you one of one?
So my parents were divorced when I was real young. Both of them remarried. Both of them had kids again. So when we start talking about family, okay, I've got lots of family. I have a sister from the original marriage. And then from there, I have two sisters on one side. I have a sister on another side. I've got a stepbrother and a stepsister as well that come into play. So, and it gets even crazier if you want to talk about cousins and aunts and uncles and all of that. It sort of blows up from there.
No, that's awesome, man. And so it sounds like everybody nowadays is kind of spread out, huh?
Yep, they are, but the group still stays together and stays in touch. That's been one thing throughout, you know, my whole life, is the family has been important. So everyone stays together. Everyone gets along with each other, which is amazing in a large family, but you know, we still have a great time.
That's awesome. What held your interest growing up? Was it sports? Was it music, theater?
Yeah, so I was a hockey player. I started when I was about 5 years old and played actually all the way through college. And even after college, I played in some men's leagues for a while. So lots of years of banging boards and skating and all of that. And, you know, my body feels it now from getting banged around for so many years. But I still love hockey, still watch it on TV, still a diehard fan of the Bruins. So
yeah. And I don't follow hockey too closely. You know, the Avalanche was a big thing here in Colorado with the Stanley Cup. I'm a Chicago native, so the Blackhawks, when they finally won the Stanley Cup, was a big deal. Weren't the Bruins pretty darn good recently?
Bruins have been decent. Yeah, you know, it's like every team. They have their ups and downs in terms of what they do, but, you know, you got to stick with your team that that you love. And I've followed them, you know, since I started playing when I was 4 or 5 years old. So Bruins have always been my team.
That's really awesome, man. You know, you mentioned that you started hockey so young, you know, five years old. We talked about the fact that you've been in med tech for going on almost 25 years. But before that, I know that you had a stint in aerospace. How did you get into all of this? Because your bachelor's is in materials engineering. Where was your interest, you know, other than sports? How did you get into such a science discipline?
Yeah, you know, so it was interesting. If I go back to high school, like even before I got into college, you know, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And it was actually one of my school teachers from high school that recommended and suggested to me to look at engineering school just because of, you know, my interest in classes and the things that I had done at that point in time. So if it hadn't been for him, I probably wouldn't have even looked at engineering. But I did. I got into engineering, wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do with that. And it wasn't until a couple of years into my college degree that I actually figured out that materials engineering is what I enjoyed. And more specifically, what I enjoyed was failure analysis. So understanding why things break and what you can do to fix them so that they don't break the next time.
That's really awesome. And so how did you, once you left college, how did you have a stint in aerospace?
Yeah, so I actually started, as soon as I graduated, I went to work for GE Aircraft Engines. And that's exactly what I was doing. I was doing failure analysis on military jet aircraft engine parts that were coming back from, at the time, the Gulf War. You know, so it was interesting to be able to understand that, get involved with it. And then from there, I went to work for a smaller company that was really based on materials testing, failure analysis, that type of thing. So this was a 20-person company where, you know, everybody wears all the hats in the business, and you get to learn a little bit about everything, whether it be marketing and selling your services to actually doing the work and managing quality activities, whatever it may be, you did a little bit of everything. Then after I was there, I went back to work for a contract manufacturer within aerospace that was making a lot of the jet aircraft engine parts for all the OEMs, but then was also doing jet aircraft engine repair of components for most of the major airlines around the world.
And so you did that for a while before you ended up transitioning to MedTech. How'd that transition happen?
So it was interesting. When I was involved with aerospace is when I first got involved with Six Sigma, lean manufacturing, that type of thing, and got my certification and was able to run a number of projects for the companies that I work for, and got real interested in spending more time doing that from a career perspective. So that's when I started looking, you know, was there an opportunity to go to a different company, go to a different industry, but really take the skill set that I had, you know, sort of learned at that point in time and be able to apply it someplace else. That's when an opportunity came up to go to work for Johnson & Johnson in one of their facilities and get involved in some of the continuous improvement, the quality activities, the things that they were doing at that manufacturing site.
Yeah. And so, you know, I mentioned, we talked offline, you oversee like 34 sites right now from a quality perspective.
Yep.
You've worked for some of the major players in the industry. As you look over the course of your career, what are some of the pivotal roles or experiences that you've had that you feel like really helped you get to where you're at today?
I think it's a little bit of everything. You know, I've done everything from hardcore engineering, roll your sleeves up, you're out on the production floor working through problems on equipment and processes. I've done that. I've been a project manager, a program manager, where you're out working with customers and trying to sell your services and bring them in and set them up and do that piece of things. You know, now that I've been in quality and been in med tech for a while, obviously I've worked with regulators and been involved with looking at what laws are, requirements are, and how you apply them within your organization. So it's been a little bit of everything. You know, the thing I would encourage people to do as they're looking or thinking about their careers is you may not necessarily know exactly the pathway that you're going to take, but I would tell you to follow the things that you enjoy doing. They'll lead you down a pathway through your career and give you some opportunities to learn new skills and be involved in new things.
So I want to push on you a little bit more.
Sure.
Because not everybody, and I say this on most of the shows, if you listen to some of the episodes, I always say this, is that you can aspire to be an executive and then you can actually become an executive. And those are two different things. And I think that there's a big purpose of the show is to try and get underneath like what's really going on. Why do some people rise to this level? Why they don't? And it doesn't mean that if you don't want to be an executive, it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. It just means that those who are aspiring can hear from how you got there. When you talk about, hey, follow your interests, I was down in the trenches, I've got hardcore engineering experience, that's well and good, but you've been able to take that piece and combine it with leadership acumen that have helped you rise to a situation where you're managing big, you know, big responsibility. Can you think of any particular experiences or where somebody gave you a shot and it kind of changed the trajectory of your career from a leadership standpoint?
Yeah, you know, I think throughout your career, you know, obviously you don't go from being an engineer on the floor to an executive with multiple sites immediately along those lines. You have to build into it. And if you look at really where those skills come from, comes from, you know, I get the question a lot from people, you know, how can they develop? How can they become a manager or a director or a VP or whatever it may be in the organization they're in? And what I would tell them to do is start small. You know, the first thing is manage yourself. And if you get good at managing yourself and managing your view of things and your aspirations and the things that you want to achieve and your performance, then that's great. The next step is do that with a small team and understand the skills that it takes to do that. You know, jumping from an individual contributor to managing a team is fairly easy. Working with your manager, working with your leader that you have, those opportunities come around much more frequently than, you know, as you go up the career ladder a little bit further. But when you're looking at making significant jumps in your career, going to from a manager to become a director, going from a director to become a VP, where you're taking on more strategy, much broader set of the organization along those lines, there's a couple of things. The first thing is, I would say, the relationships that you've established in your career. You know, this is a lesson I didn't learn when I was early on in my career, but I definitely learned as I went through that relationship management and understanding your peers, understanding the rest of the organization and what drives the organization, understanding what motivates other people, other leaders, is really important. So if you can establish relationships with people and people know who you are and what you're delivering, the value that you bring to the organization, becomes much easier for you to ascend to different levels within your career. The next thing is, I would tell you, find a coach or a mentor. Find someone that you respect. Find someone that's achieved that level within the organization and glean every bit of information that you can from them. A mentor can help you when you run into barriers, when you run into problems, when you don't know what the answer is and you can't Google it or find out what it is along those lines, you know, and knowing the history of the company. Between all of those things, when you look at the relationship management, you find your coach and your mentor, you're driving yourself from a performance perspective, opportunities will become available for you to ascend and go to the next level. Some of it's timing. That's, you know, I hate to say it, but you know, as you go up the ladder, the opportunities or the number of spots goes down. Sometimes you may be the best person in the world, but there's no opportunity for you to ascend at that point in time. And that's where I think from a career perspective, you have to be willing to consider, do I want to leave this company to explore opportunity someplace else? Is that a way for me to ascend within my career and take on more responsibilities and more activities? Sometimes you can do it within the same company. Sometimes you have to go to other companies to be able to do those things.
It's interesting what you said about one of the easy pieces is going from an individual contributor to a manager. I feel like that might be one of the hardest things.
Well, this is why I say it's easy. It's easy for you to get the opportunity to do that. It's not easy for you to make that transition. And I think what a lot of people find is that everybody thinks it's glorious to go down the management route and everybody wants to be a manager and take on more responsibility and do that. A lot of times when you get into positions and you begin to deal with problems of other people, whether it's performance issues or personal issues that they have or whatever it may be, people find out, you know, being a manager is not necessarily the most glorious thing in the world. You know, and I think what people go through in that transition is they find out, is it something they really want to do? That's the difficult part, is for them to learn that piece of it. Finding the opportunity for you to take on the responsibility for one person or two people or half a dozen people, that's usually easier in your career just because it's lower level in the organization. And a lot of times management are trying to seek the next managers. So they're giving people those opportunities to explore, how do you manage one person or how do you manage two? And can you make that transition from individual contributor to a manager?
Mm-hmm. What do you think the biggest difference is as you rise up into higher levels of leadership between, let's say, a director versus a VP? From your perspective, what's the primary difference that people should know?
Yeah, so some of it comes down to understanding strategy and helping to develop strategy for the company and set the tone about the direction that you're going from there. As an individual, I think part of it also is, comes down to your leadership style and understanding that as you go from a manager to a director to a VP, where you're managing people at each of those stages, but what you're really doing the higher up that you're going is you're managing people that are managing people. So what you manage and how you manage and how you teach and coach and mentor and drive people from a performance perspective is different as you move up. Because as you start off, when you're a manager, you're driving individuals to perform and deliver. When you move to a director, you may be driving managers to manage people or supervisors to manage people. And then as you go to a VP, you're driving organizations. And sometimes it's within your control, sometimes it's not within your control. So you have to learn to manage by influence as well, and how to succeed is a, you know, on the goals and objectives that you've established, but not everything might be or may not be within your control to be able to do that. So,
and you've had the opportunity, I mean, for quite some time now to manage performance and to kind of coach and mentor and groom. What do you think separates, and it could be twofold. One is individual contributors. The other one is leadership. But what, in your mind, separates top performers from the average?
Yeah. So this, again, is going to come down to the culture that's within your company and the culture that's set by the management. So organization to organization, you're going to see different types of people succeed. And it really is driven a lot by what the culture of the individual company is and what they value within that company. But why do certain people succeed? I think certain people have drive and they want to. There's a lot of people that I've found that talk about wanting to succeed and talk about wanting to progress in their career, but they never move to action to do anything about it. So all they do is talk. And if all you're going to do is talk, then you're never going to ascend within an organization. You actually have to deliver. You have to do things and accomplish tasks. So I think it comes down to the motivation of the individual and what they're willing to do to achieve whatever the goal is that they've set forth for this themselves.
But talk more so, yeah, it's one thing to say, you know, big things, and it's another thing to actually get into the, you know, nose to the grindstone and make it happen. But what separates, like, why there's quality engineers, then there's brilliant quality engineers.
Yep.
There's directors of quality who really kind of have a natural ability and outshine the rest. There's other ones who have a natural ability and they don't even come close to somebody else who, right? I'm sure you've seen it both ways. Is there anything in particular that stands out to you other than the drive to get it done?
So I do think it's a little bit different when you're talking individual contributor technical side versus managerial side. Let's talk about the technical side. I have found the best engineers and the people that are most successful in what they do have a intellectual curiosity about whatever they're working on. And what I mean by that is I meet a lot of engineers and talk with a lot of engineers. There's a lot of them that are just as happy to go out and Google the answer to whatever they need and then go do it. There's other people that are more interested in the why something happens, and they spend a bit more time understanding whether it be the physics behind it, whether it be the mathematics behind why something occurs, or the chemical reaction and understanding why certain things do, you know, work the way that they do. Those people that have that curiosity and dig into those types of things, I have found in the long run to be better engineers, better problem solvers.
And that makes sense, because they're not only understanding, by understanding the why behind it, it's tying to the bigger picture of what they're doing for the business.
Yep, yep. On the managerial side, you know, the people that I have seen most successful are the ones that not only take their goals in mind, but their people's goals. And it really comes down to their philosophy of management. So like for me, I always look at, as a leader, my responsibility is to make my people successful. It's not about making myself successful, you know. You can do that as an individual contributor in terms of what you're doing, but as a leader, as a of an organization, or as a leader of a department, making your people successful, giving them the opportunities to ascend in their career and do things that they want to do, is what makes you successful in what you're trying to do as a leader. And those are the best people that I've seen. If you look at you know, some of the best CEOs that are out there, they're the ones that have developed the next CEO, or have developed people that have gone off to run other companies. They don't even stay within the same company they're in. But that leader is so powerful, so understanding of what's necessary, and is a coach and a mentor, and teaches the people the things that they need to do, that they end up being successful in their careers and whatever they choose the direction they want to go.
Yeah. 100%. And you mentioned, hey, a lot of somebody's success is dictated by the culture of the organization and how some are successful in one culture and not in another. How do you define, I mean, how do you describe culture? It's such a buzz term sometimes. I think we lose sight of what it actually means. What does it mean to you? And what are your thoughts about building culture within your organization,
yeah,
specifically that you lead?
So I mean, not to get too cliche or too touchy-feely on things, but you know, for me, culture is pretty simple. It's values, beliefs, and behaviors. And if those three things are misaligned, then you have a bad culture within a company. So what people or individuals value, what they believe is right and wrong, and the behaviors that they exhibit that show those two things, those prior things. When they're aligned, company's culture is good, department's culture is good, work group, team, whatever it may be. You know, I think a lot of times people think that culture only exists at a company level, and it does, but it exists at multiple levels. You can have, I've worked in places that have fantastic individual departments or work groups because the culture that's set by the leader that is driven within that organization is phenomenal. And that group is successful in what they're doing. You know, obviously you'd like to see it at a much broader level when it's a company and everybody within the company is successful in what they're doing. But you have to look at it at those basic things, values, beliefs, and behaviors.
I love how you broke that down. And I think it's really important for those that are listening to realize that, okay, you may have some struggles from, you know, an organizational culture situation temporarily, or maybe it's just kind of perpetuating, but you have so much influence, especially if you're a leader, you have so much influence over the culture of what you can control too. And it doesn't necessarily, especially in bigger companies, right? A department is sometimes a company.
Yeah, it is.
The size of another company,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know that bet. One of the cool things I love about this show is that I give the opportunity to call out anybody who's been, you know, influential to you as a coach, as a mentor, somebody who you think has been a catalyst to where you're at today. Anything come to mind that you'd like to share, Gar?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's not just one. You know, when I go back and I look through my career at all the stages, there's always been somebody that I've utilized as a coach or a mentor, or sometimes they've been a manager or a leader for me that have given me little nuggets of information that have helped my career along. You know, if I go back to when I started in med tech, there was a gentleman that was the head of quality at the site that I went to. His name was Harold Lede. And Harold, fantastic individual, was a good friend throughout my entire career. I actually lived next to him a couple of times throughout my career, even though we worked for different companies. But he was a person that gave extremely good advice as a coach, as a mentor. And he's someone that I very much so respected. So I would start there from a med tech perspective. And then from there, you know, at Medtronic, their chief quality officer, Lou Antendi, was somebody that I work with, you know, quite a bit from a career perspective while I was there. Brian Berry is another individual that did wonders for my career, was a great coach and mentor. But, you know, I can go on from there. I can probably name a dozen other people that have influenced me and you know, help me shape my career and help me shape sort of my management style and the things that I believe in from a culture perspective as well.
That's awesome. And clearly, they obviously were very instrumental to help you get to where you are today, which is awesome. And I know that you've been instrumental in many, many people's lives to help them continue to progress in their careers. For those who don't necessarily know you directly, but they're listening to your advice here right now, and they're like, man, this is what I want to do. I want to lead basically the food chain of my functional area, or maybe I'm going to be the CEO of a company one day. Other than, you know, having that drive and perhaps that curiosity, what other advice do you have for somebody who's listening, who's trying to aspire to higher levels of leadership?
Yeah, so I would definitely, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, something I didn't necessarily learn early on in my career, but I did as I was progressing through, that relationships and the people that you meet and work with throughout your career become extremely important. Within MedTech, I think a lot of people on the outside look at MedTech and they say, oh, there's hundreds of companies and, you know, it's a huge industry and all that. But I can tell you right now that in the MedTech industry, I can pick up a phone and probably within two phone calls, find out somebody that knows anybody else within the MedTech industry. The industry is very tight. And the thing is the relationships that you develop throughout your career carry with you wherever you go. So, you know, they talk about don't ever burn any bridges. Well, I can tell you that's important. Don't burn bridges. But I think what's more important is even as you're working with peers, people that you may think don't have any influence over what you're doing, you know, maybe they're in a different functional area. At some point in time in your career, that person will cycle back in. And the relationship that you've established with them 10 years, 15 years ago becomes critically important in terms of the things that you're trying to accomplish today. So I would tell people to be mindful of the relationships they develop and understand that it's not just about you and your functional area that you're in. It's about working as an entire company. So it's all areas, all people. Get to learn who you work with and what drives them and what's important to them.
Yep. 100%. And, you know, it's interesting because you have a lot of large company experience and you've been able to stay, you know, continue to manage quality at higher levels. Some people are thinking to themselves, do I need to get regulatory experience as well to round out my quality experience? Do I need to get quality experience to round out my regulatory experience? Any thoughts on that, knowing kind of what your history has been?
Yeah, so I think regardless of what your functional area is, it doesn't prevent you from gaining experience in those other areas. So, you know, I've been in quality, dedicated quality now for 15, 20 years along those lines, but I've had exposure and been involved in writing submissions for brand new products that are going in and getting involved in regulatory discussions with regulators on clearance of products or challenges with new laws or guidances that are coming out. So I think what it is don't necessarily think that just because you have a functional hat, that's the only area that you can work within. And especially if you're working for a large company that has, you know, multiple functions or it's broken out by departments, you have the ability to develop those working relationships with those other groups and gain experience into the things that are occurring there. So exposure over time, getting involved in problems or helping to solve problems, that's the way that you learn the business and learn the other areas as well.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that as far as getting involved in solving the problems versus shying away and thinking that somebody else is going to solve it and tell you what to do. I think that's where the leaders are truly separated from the rest of the pack is people who gravitate towards figuring out a problem.
Yep.
Well, you're a wealth of experience, man. I appreciate it. I'm going to ask you one last thing. We're going to fast forward to your retirement party and everybody's there to celebrate you. It's come time for speeches. What are you hoping they're going to say about you?
You know, I'm actually getting close to retirement. Well, at least I hope I am at some point. But I think, you know, the thing that I want to be remembered for is that I've built leaders in the organization, and the people that I've interacted with have gone on to be successful in their careers, whether it's within the company or someplace else. So I think, you know, what I hope people are saying is that here's an individual that was able to identify talent and help that talent become, you know, the best of whatever they can be. And they've been successful in their careers because of it.
That's awesome, man. Well, like I said, we've got mutual connections and people can't speak highly enough about you. So glad that you're here today, kind of share the insights that you have. If it's okay with you, we'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile as well as a link to Flex for those who want to perhaps reach out and learn more.
Absolutely.
All right, Garth. Thanks so much.
Great. Thanks, Mitch.
Thanks for listening to the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com. Or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.